I'm going to talk about my own work. Because I was invited to bring my latest performance, which is called The Threat of Silence, to this festival. And finally, the logistics made it impossible, which is very sad for me, because really, I want you to know me through my work. And talking about my work is not the same thing as you seeing my work. But I have a couple of short films, and I will talk a little bit in between these two films, just to give you a taste of what I do. And I think it's important because in the Magdalena, we are all making very, very different kinds of work. It's not like we are coming from the same tradition and making theatre in one kind of a way. We're very, very distinct in our approaches to theatre, and I think that's what you will get this afternoon listening to the five people who are going to talk. I think everybody's talking about their work, aren't they? I'm right, yeah. And very welcome to these young people. Is your English very good?
Yeah.
Am I speaking slow enough?
Yeah.
I'll try and speak slowly. I'm not very good at speaking slowly, but tell me if I'm not, okay? Here, I also have brought many programs of the performance, which I don't want to take home. Okay, so please take afterwards. Okay. The threat of silence. Silence in which the possible multiplies. Silence in which the distribution of the sensible is remade. Silence in which we are left thinking, aware of the space we are left to fill. So this is just a small set of extracts, fragments from the performance, and I will show a longer extract at the end. The Threat of Silence came out of a performance that I made, premiered in 2007 or 8, I think, called The Axe, The Axe Vigia. The Axe Vigia was a piece that was a response to the femicide that is still being perpetrated on the American, the US, Mexican border, where in the last 10, 15 years, more than 500, probably much more now, young women have been kidnapped and very brutally murdered, and their bodies dumped in the deserts around the city of Juarez, which is a notorious drug-dealing city in the very north of Mexico. And nobody has been prosecuted for these murders. And we still wait for those prosecutions to happen. When I first heard about this situation, I was deeply moved and immersed myself in a research about this particular situation and sought to make a performance about this. It took me 3 years because the question was, how do you make a performance in response to such brutality? You can't speak about the brutality. You can't make a show that talks about the horror. You have to do the opposite somehow in order to confront an audience or to allow an audience to reflect upon the situation. So this was my challenge, and I tried for 3 years, and finally came with I won't go into detail, but the process brought me to an understanding on a quite profound level of less is more, which I knew already, but with this performance I really had to. I had to do as little as possible, and it had to be the right thing. And it ended with a series of actions with 12 young women, doing only 3 different actions over a period of an hour. After completing that performance, I knew I had to make something that wasn't so brutal, because I had immersed myself in the horrors of this situation for the last 3 years. Yes.
Do you know why this murder happened?
I'm not going to go into that now. I'll talk to you later and give you some resources. Yeah. It's a big situation. You can Google it. Yeah. Out of that process, I knew I had to make something that was much more beautiful and, in a way, much more abstract and not so politically concerned. But what the performance had brought me to was this, the search that I, it's difficult to explain, the search that I was looking for in the acts was how to place these young women, and I worked with young women, 12 young women in about 10 different situations around the world. I would work with them for 4 days to perform, to rehearse them into the structure of the performance, was how to make them on stage become very strong and very secure and very unjudgmental and very in their own bodies. And the thing that we found became very silent and very still. And I realized that this was a kind of something I'd been looking for in a long time in my work and in placing the female body on stage in a position of kind of power, but not aggressive power. So with the threat of silence, I wanted to revisit this stillness and this quietness. Also because of a growing concern and belief that we are so bombarded in our contemporary culture through the internet, through the media, through television, through advertising. We are constantly bombarded by images and sounds, and there's very little place for silence, and particularly I'm speaking in Oroville, which is a kind of strange place to speak about this, but however, outside of Oroville. and I began to think about theatre, that the possibility of theatre being a place of refuge from this bombardment of contemporary noise. Because certainly in my culture, the secular society is more and more prevalent. And places where people can gather and be quiet and reflect together are less and less and less. So I began to think maybe the theatre is a place for this. And this was the beginning of the experiment of the threat of silence. And I wanted the dichotomy of this title, The Threat of Silence. And I decided what I wanted to do was to... I'd worked with 12 young women before, so I was working very much as a pedagogue. But this time I knew I really wanted to work with very experienced collaborators. So I worked with a filmmaker, Zoe Christensen. I worked with a writer, and she's from Norway, a writer from Australia called Margaret Cameron, all women that have been involved in the Magdalena Project, thank you, a musician who is, in fact, the teacher of my daughter, a musician who's an extraordinary cellist, and a performer, the performer who I have the most respect for in Wales, who I hope to bring here to India, but her father just died, Eddie Ladd, who you saw in the film. And I took just the question of, this question was, what is quietude for you in your form? How do we express quietude? And we began a discussion over about a year and a half, and little by little began to build the text that became the performance. We built the film that you could see there's a big screen, and then we just had the screen and the cellist and the performer. So we built the film that became perform as the main visual aspect of the performance. We built the text, and Nikki and Eddie built the musical level, and Eddie worked with me on the choreography. So I was working with very experienced people within this quite abstract investigation about what is quietude in writing, what is quietude in filmmaking, what is quietude in choreography, what is quietude in music. And in fact, the musician was the most excited, in a way, because she said she's been spending her whole life trying to play one piece of Bach, and she still hasn't got it because she hasn't found enough of the spaces in between the notes. So it was a very exciting collaboration to work with such experienced people. One of the other threads, how am I doing for time?
Are you
time?
Fine. I've
got 9 minutes at the end of this
one. Fine.
Okay. The other thread that I came from that began to fascinate me. I'm very fascinated by certain artists. Robert Wilson, to a certain extent, is one of them, because of, you might know his work, you might not, but he is very uncompromising about time. He will make 24-hour performances, very, very slow-moving performances. I've always been fascinated with the No Theatre. I've been fascinated with another artist called Bill Viola. Does anybody know his work? One person? Bill Viola, two people, three people.
Hooray.
Yes. I recommend you Google Bill Viola. He's the most, I think, the most extraordinary artist. He's certainly the most highly respected video artist, really, current video artist. He's commanding huge commissions. He's doing one for St. Paul's Cathedral at the moment, which will be it's extraordinary because St. Paul's is our biggest church in Britain, and he's creating an altarpiece that is a video installation, which will be permanent there. But his work, but both Wilson and Bill Viola, I found in my research, had become fascinated with the work of an experimental psychologist called Daniel Stern. And Daniel Stern was doing a lot of research into child psychology and into the mother-child relationship. And he made a series of experiments with films where he was filming he would film, one of the most famous was the filming of a mother and a child in the moment when the child begins to cry, scream, and the mother reaches for the child to pick it up, to comfort it. He filmed this action, this very simple action, and then he slowed it down so it took 10 minutes so that he could, and he did it with very, very high resolution film. And what was discovered was very extraordinary, that in the first moments of the mother reaching for the child, there is rage in the face of and the eyes of the mother and in the hands. And gradually, as she moves forward to towards the child, this begins to evaporate. But also the first reaction of the baby is of terror. Yeah? Between here and being picked up, there are 1,000 changes of emotion, or maybe not 1,000, but many, many changes of emotion just in this very, very small action until she picks the baby up and to comfort it. And what this fascinated Bill Viola and Robert Wilson and certainly me is the factor that how much we miss in daily, in the understanding of our human relationships, how much is actually going on between us that we cannot see because we are moving too fast. We're always moving too fast to really understand what is perhaps really happening. So this was also a fascination. And Bill Viola makes films where he will make a single action and then he slows that down, right down, so that you really see the minutiae of changes in a moment, which is very beautiful. It's very beautiful work. I really recommend you have a look at that, just as a reflection of our humanity. But for me, it was a sign to do with what I've been obsessed with, which is this slowing down. That as I get older, I really, really want less, 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 less. And I want less, less, less in theatre. And I want the theatre, at least that I make, to be not to entertain, not to feed you with a message so you can escape from your troubles, but to create a space where in the silence of the theatre or in the event, we can just reflect. We can, the work that is happening is in a way slow enough, but hopefully engaging enough to hold us, but to allow us to enter our own thoughts and our own reflection, either in response to what is happening or in association with what is happening, or just to fall asleep because it's slow and it's quiet and there are other people there and it's safe and all of these things. So it's not about trying to entertain people. So it's quite a risky thing to do. Of course, at my age, I know and understand the dynamics of what one needs to do to keep try to keep the audience's attention. But I've tried to take a real risk with this performance. But I've taken the risk with, I think, very high quality material from high quality artists. I think that's really all I want to say. I'd like to show this 9 minutes, and then do I have any time for questions?
Yes, 5 minutes.
Okay, so the next piece I show you, there's obviously a lot more I could say about it, and in fact, there's more said in the program. There's a narrative in there. If anybody has any questions, we have 5 minutes, or if not, that's fine. If there's no questions, it's fine. Don't have comments? Yeah.
I'm just thinking in some ways, you used to be talking about wanting a place of quietude,
yeah,
and a place of refuge. Mm. Do you think you could say then that this is replacing the church?
No, I wouldn't say that. I certainly wouldn't attempt to say that. I might say I'm attempting to create a place of refuge. I wouldn't say I was trying to replace the church. I think that we have lost our places of refuge, and that we need them. And maybe the theatre can be a place, because it's a place of live gathering.
Why have you used the term threat in the name?
Threat of silence. That's quite complicated, but it's to do with many things. In the programme, I talk about the different kinds of silences that exist. No, they can go. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for being here.
Bye-bye.
I talk about the many different kinds of silences that there are. And silence as a threat is one of the strongest for me. It can be a threat. Silence can, Margaret Cameron, the writer, coined this phrase. It's the silence that, there is a silence that beholds, and there is a silence that withholds. And this withholding silence, I think, is a big threat to humanity and to relationships, to the microcosm and the macrocosm. The withholding silence, and whatever that means to you, I know what it means to me.
Is silence an inner state or an outer state, or both?
Yeah, I don't know, but probably. I don't know.
Because a lot of people don't get disturbed by silence within. Some people, from sound outside, they don't get disturbed by sound from outside.
Yeah.
Like in India, you've seen with us, so much noise everywhere.
I know.
And somehow they keep quite silent inside. I mean, most of the yogis probably do that all the time.
Absolutely. I mean, that's it's quite strange bringing something like this to India, where I think we are so less evolved, where I come from, in terms of this understanding of keeping this inner and outer silence. We haven't got it yet.
And sometimes you can go inside the mafia, it's so silent.
It's frightening, yes. It's this, exactly. This kind of, it's a big thing, silence.
I'd like it if you could elaborate a little on the work, on your work as a director with a performer here, with Eddie. Is it that you, I was wondering, how did she arrive at this particular, the
choreography?
Song, the movement, yes.
We really began with a lot of talking.
And was the film material already there?
The film material we made separately, yes. So she...
Is it there for her to respond?
If she wanted to, yes. And we made some references, but I wasn't trying to make her illustrate the film or anything like this. There's a very... You didn't see it a lot. There's a very beautiful sequence in it between the old lady and Eddie, where they're actually mirroring each other. And the old lady's very still. It's just a series of looks, but Eddie has these as well. And it's something about, and then the child, which is actually my daughter. You have these three generations, three generations. It's my daughter, and it's the musician's mother. And so I'm not really answering your question. With Eddie, I mean, Eddie is very experienced and adept at creating her own material. So we talk a lot, and then she will propose something, and then I'll pull certain things from it, and then add certain things, change the rhythm maybe, and build it in that way. But also we work with the writer. Margaret Cameron was there for a period of time. But I only worked with her for 2 weeks. It wasn't a long period. So, and the choreography you see in this last film is actually the most vigorous in the performance. This is the sort of climax of the what we call the terrible bell in the middle of it. But it's a two-way collaboration. Me as the eyes and her as the very experienced. She normally makes solo performances. Yeah.
What did you discover, or what are your thoughts around why the slowing down and the nuance and the subtlety is so incredibly moving for people?
I don't know if it is incredibly moving for people. It's a search to create something that's moving for me. So, and this is quite a young performance. It hasn't played that often. So I'm not really sure about how it's received yet. Any more questions, Tom? I'm sorry, Parvati, that I didn't do the 25 years of the London Lane. But you can buy the book or go online. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.